This is Chthonia, the world of the dark feminine.
Hello and welcome to Chthonia, the podcast dealing with the dark feminine. I'm your host, Breach Burke. This week we're going to talk about, we've been speaking about voodoo loas, okay, or the intermediary spirits between the creator and the human world. And we've also been talking about the Yoruba religion and the idea of the Orishas, which we see. And there is some crossover there between these deities and then the deities that you see in voodoo and then in other, you know, in these sort of Afro-Caribbean, Brazilian kinds of religions. You see this idea of either the Orisha or the Loa, who are these intermediary spirits between, that function. Even though technically the belief systems are quote unquote monotheistic in a lot of cases, because there is a sort of distant creator figure that doesn't isn't on the earth, doesn't really deal with humans, but has these other spirits to act sort of as an intermediary in this sort of combination of, you know, older pagan ways of practicing religion and what we think of now as more modern ethics, doctrine-based ways of dealing with religion. Though most of these religious systems are also, they're less about doctrine and they're more about experience, about experiencing the god, about being possessed by the god, and having experiences of dancing and doing ritual. It's about putting these things into action, not about writing long scriptures and having long theological treatises and things like that. It's definitely more of an experienced religion and not one that's intellectualized in any way. So as part of our series, I'm going to talk about two of the Orishas. Next week I'm going to talk about Urzuli. This week we're going to talk about Oya. And Oya is the Yoruban goddess or Orisha of weather, especially tornadoes. Lightning, destructive rainstorms, fire, female leadership, persuasive charm, and transformation. So, and she's considered to be one of the most powerful deities in the Brazilian Macumba traditions. As we had mentioned in the previous podcast, Macumba is these religions that, of course, that term was often used derisively to denote Umbanda and Kimbanda as these sort of quote unquote superstitious religions, but nonetheless, Umbanda tends to not identify as Macumba, although Kimbanda does. Nonetheless, we have the idea that this, we're seeing the connections here between these religious systems and then the African Yoruba beliefs, and how these deities interact with each other, and even how they may be related to each other or have some of the same attributes as deities that we're going to see, or loas that we see in the voodoo tradition. And I'm going to talk about that. Okay, with Oya, she's somebody, when women find themselves in these hard-to-resolve conflicts, she's the one to call on for protection. Her favorite color is that burgundy color that's associated with wine. And she exhibits 9 whirlwinds, as 9 is her sacred number, and allegedly she has 9 children. Now, in one version, all her children were stillborn and that she was considered to be barren. However, another version, all of those, she is considered to be the goddess of the Niger River. But in the Brazilian tradition, of the Amazon River. And these 9 children that she has in African tradition are supposed to be the tributaries of the Niger River, the 9 different ones. Okay. Her sacred animal is a water buffalo, and we'll talk about the sort of symbolism of that and where we also see that to appear in other places. Now, her one thing I think we want to talk about, there's several things regarding Oya that I think are important to discuss, and the first is the idea of her marriage to Xango. Okay, it's Xango. He is considered to be, now again, he's an Orisha, but he has many of the attributes that you see of these lightning and thunder gods, like Indra, for example, or Zeus. or Jupiter, or Lugh in the Celtic. He is a storm god. The lightning bolt is his weapon. And Oya as his wife. Now, Tshango has three wives. Okay, Oba, Oshun, and Oya. And it is said that Oya is his favorite out of the three wives. And she is so since as this Orisha associated with the wind and with storm, it's usually said that she always precedes Tshango when he is going out to battle with his lightning bolt or to bring a storm, because obviously as the winds whip up, you know that the Tshango with his thunderbolt cannot be far behind. Now there's a couple of different stories that I want to relate, so I'm going to talk about those. And also, in addition to that, her comparisons to the other voodoo loas, and also I wanted to talk a little bit about her association with the water buffalo, because there's also a separate story associated with that. So let's start there. Let's start with Tshango and her marriage to Tshango. Now, supposedly she is the most favored of his three wives, and the stories that I have read seem to indicate that Oya appears in some ways. She's very primeval. I find myself thinking of Salem Matangi, for example, in the Hindu Mahavidyas. Dwells in the forest, as Tshango eventually does. He eventually removes himself from society and lives in the forest. But there's a sense that she is very that she's very rough. Again, her animal is the water buffalo, and sometimes she is said to have the attributes that her hair is curled like buffalo horns and such things. And the story is let me see if I have a copy of the story here. I want to read it to you. Before I move on to that, I'm just going to mention that her some of her attributes are the sword and the machete and the fly whisk. Okay. The machete is used as a symbol of cutting down dead wood. So she is a goddess who is associated with, or I should say an Orisha, I keep saying goddess, but she is associated with, clearing away the dead, making room. And she is also considered to be kind of a psychopomp, one who guides those who are newly dead to their next destination. And the fly whisk, of course, it's not hard to see where that association comes from. The fly whisk is usually horsehair or something on a handle that one uses to swat flies with, and sometimes people use it to fan themselves. But it looks like a big bunch of hair on the end of a stick. Given her association with winds and with this sort of violent wind energy, that's not too hard to see what the associations might be there. She's the guardian of the realm between life and death. And she is not only the goddess of spirit communication, funerals, and cemeteries, but also of clairvoyance, psychic abilities, intuition, and rebirth. Okay. And she is also associated with witchcraft. So we see all of this. She's both loved and feared for good reason. Unleashed Oya is the savage warrior, the protective mother, she whose power sweeps all injustice, deceit, and dishonesty from her path. She destroys villages if the need is true enough. For while she understands everything, she will only accept, act upon, and speak the truth, even when it's hard to bear. Wow. Okay. She's, that is an attribute that I have not really gotten into of these dark goddesses, is that they always deal well with clarity. When we talk about clarity, what we mean is seeing things for what they really are. And it is a truth. And truth is often, especially now for some reason, truth is something that's very hard for people to accept. There's a lot of people who seem to feel today the truth is, quote-unquote, your opinion. But that may only be true in some senses, in the sense of, for example, what systems, symbols, or tales might work for you in terms of religion, in terms of mythical things that you might believe. But unfortunately, there's been a tendency to try to extend this to to things that are factual as well. It's not, I say the sky is blue. Well, that's your opinion. My opinion, the sky is not blue. Well, Yeah, there's just certain things. Or 2 + 2 = 4. Well, maybe I don't want to believe 2 + 2 = 4. You know, that's your opinion. You should have an open mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you see where I'm going with that. But I don't want to digress too much into that. But my point is that oftentimes, you know, perhaps not at that extreme of a level, but we do often deceive ourselves about things. And the Dark Mothers often, sometimes very violently and savagely, will rip away any illusions that you have. But as my ex-mother-in-law used to say, it's good for you. You know, it's meant to be good for you. And to bring you, put you in the right path, because you may have been, you know, walking along blindly down, you know, in an avenue that's not good for you. Okay. She's also the protectress of women, patron of feminine leadership. Okay. She's passionate, fearless, sensual, and independent. Well, sounds, again, here we go. Very, very much part of that list of qualities that we see in the Dark Mothers. Okay, so, okay, what I'm trying to find here is this Shango story, which I know I have here. Okay. Okay, so here's one story of her and Shango that I have, that I've read. She says supposedly that the two of them, Shango and Oya, were having a fight, and she charged at him with her mighty horns. But Shango appeased her by placing a big dish of akata, which are bean cakes, in front of her. Pleased by the offering of her favorite food, Oya made peace with Shango and gave him her two horns. When he was in need, he had only to beat these horns one against the other, and she would come to his aid. Now, the other story that I read, I don't want to read the whole thing, this is a book by Judith Gleason, Orisha, The Gods of Yorubaland. There's a story that's told, and I'm going to paraphrase it rather than read it the way she writes it, where a woman goes to a marketplace and she has paid for a certain quantity of wine, and she drinks the wine down, but then she throws the glass at the man who sold her the wine and said, this has been watered down, you insult me, and so she left. And the man follows her. Now, as it turns out, the man is Shango, and she is Oya. And she goes into the forest to change into her guise. Now, he refers to her as a beautiful antelope, and she says, you know, don't taunt me. Really, the implication is that she is putting on her her guise as a buffalo. Okay? But, you know, they have this conversation, and, you know, she's sort of trying to seduce him, and then he says, oh, look, no, don't be silly. You know you're my wife. Let's go back. And so she goes back, and there's three wives. They each have their own residence. Okay? And Oya, when she comes back, the other two wives are none too pleased to see her, because they feel that keeping Shango's attention is difficult enough. And now with her there, this incites a lot of jealousy. So Ocean finally gets very... She gets very mad, and she goes to Oya and basically is picking on her for how she looks, you know, because she's very rough. You know, her hair's wild. You know, she doesn't do anything to beautify herself. Okay, she's very very natural. And so Oshun says to her, you know, what is it with you? Why does he pay attention to you? You don't do anything to to beautify yourself. You don't do anything to why don't you do anything to be pleasing? You look filthy and you look disgusting. Why is he so attracted to you and not to us? And of course, Oya turns on her and says, well, she says, I'm the one who's keeping the house. I'm the one that's watching after your children. How exactly does she say it here? I have it in the thing. She says, I'm too busy taking care of things around here, your children included. You spend so much time bathing yourself and grooming your skin that they run around covered with dust, or would if I didn't see to them. Their bottoms unclothed, their noses never failing sources of drivel. When it's time to nurse the twins, it is I who pace up and down soothing their cries. It's my feet the dogs lick, while you are sitting somewhere in the shade letting a friend converse with your intricate scalp. So she basically says, you know, yes, I'm actually doing the work of a wife while you're just sitting around, you know, powdering your nose, basically, is kind of the idea. So there's this idea, so you get this idea that she is definitely more practical, more earthy, And she is not as interested in being delicate or, you know, what we think of as delicately feminine. She definitely does not have those attributes. So the two of them get into this big argument. And then Shango hears it, and he comes over. And she, you know, basically Ocean threatens to take her her skin, her animal skin, and to rip it into a million pieces so that she can be just like the rest of them, as she said, not special. And she said to her, well, you know, go ahead and rip it apart. That's just merely a shadow. You know, you can't conquer me. And Shango then comes in and says, yes, but I could destroy both of you. So the women to both scatter, both back to their village, you know, their home villages when they're threatened by Shango. And it's said that what Oya does is she goes to Ishu, whom we talked about as, you know, the husband of Pamba Gira. And Ishu, of course, is the trickster god. So she goes to him, and then when Shango pursues her and throws his thunderbolt, Ishu catches it, throws it back at him, and hits him right in the forehead. So this is the first time Shango's been defeated, and he decides probably not a good idea to get on the bad side of Ishu. So he makes peace with him. And Oya, of course, returns home and ends up becoming his favorite wife. When Ocean finally does return home, you know, as they say, she's laid down with brass ornaments. They see that Oya is now his favorite. So, so there's this, she's definitely very powerful in her own right. She is very practical. She is, you know, she's action oriented. Okay. She's very, you know, she's like the, what you would think of as the Princess of Discs or the Queen of Pentacles in the tarot. She's got this this practical quality. As she said, she's the one taking care of the children. She's the one who's actually doing the work of nurturing, not just walking around like looking at herself in a mirror. So she's rather critical of that and of the women who criticize her because she doesn't walk around and do those things. Now there is another story that I'm going to talk about another marriage of Oya, but I wanna save that for the moment. Next thing I want to talk about is the comparison to the goddess Brige. Okay, now obviously Maman Brigitte was the first voodoo loa that we had spoken about at the beginning of the year, and Maman Brigitte, of course, as we have said, is based on Saint Brigid or Saint Brige, and also the Celtic goddess Brige as well. And it is said that Oya is also associated with Brige. And in particular, she's associated with a particular saint, Virgin Mary as Our Lady of La Candelaria. Okay, and I want to tell you just very briefly about the attributes of the Virgin of Candelaria. She is the version of the Virgin Mary who is honored in the Canary Islands. Okay, and she is depicted as a black Madonna. Which is, I did a podcast with Ellen Jones last year on Black Madonnas as we see them in Europe. But this is a Black Madonna that we see in the islands. And so, you know, you can go back and listen to that podcast to talk about Black Madonna as representing, again, this very ancient, earthy kind of energy. And she is, and of course, the Virgin of Candelaria is worshipped on February 2nd. Well, I shouldn't say worshipped, but she's, her feast day is February 2nd, St. Brigid's Day. Okay, it's the same thing. And she's, so again, her appearance has to do with like a miraculous statue and so forth, and I'm not going to get into all of that because I don't think it's relevant here. But here we have, so again, we have this deity who has all these attributes. Now, what makes her like Maman Brigitte is her connection in particular to the dead. As it says here, Oya is an Orisha of very fiery demeanor. Okay, there's your fire, right? And has this far-flung connection with Celtic Brigitte or Brigitte, both in her voodoo counterpart, Maman Brigitte, and her association with Our Lady of Candelaria. What it notes is that she is a guardian of graveyards. Okay, so Oya also guards the dead, and she also, as I had mentioned, brings the those who are newly dead. She aids them in their journey, and as we can see from the story, that she is someone who has, in spite of her perhaps what you might think of as a rough exterior, she's actually quite motherly and quite protective. and she will quarrel and raise her voice, and she will not take being insulted or put down or anything. And she will even challenge her own husband. She definitely has those very forthright qualities that we might associate also in tarot and in things like that with the fire element. Okay. There's that intensity, there's that movement, there's the violence of movement. Okay, so she's air and fire, really. And air, fire, and earth. I mean, we see that as well. And water, because of her connection to the rivers. So in a way, she is sort of this very, very sort of primordial elemental deity that fits into all of these different categories. And it's interesting that a goddess of, or a orisha of having to do with the waters actually ends up having this kind of association with fire. So dark mothers are very, very complicated. It's hard to say what they are, you know, if they're one thing or another. Okay, so I've mentioned that about Maman Brigitte and the connection to Oya. I know I have another note here. Queen of the marketplace. She's a shrewd businesswoman and adept with horses, which is interesting. As the wind, she's the first breath and the last, the one who carries spirits of the dead to the other world. And that's why she's associated with cemeteries. Okay, so this is another version of that. I'm just going through my notes here. She's often called upon by women to settle disputes in their favor. Okay. I don't want to be repetitive of things that I've already covered. And I just want to see if there's anything else that I wanted to discuss. Mentioned some people. There's some people here who try to connect Oya with the constellation of Virgo, and they were trying to equate Shango with Heracles. But I think Shango's more in line with deities like Zeus or Jehovah or Indra or Lug, who are these lightning deities. I don't see anything else that I had wanted to discuss from that angle. Just making sure before I move on to the next thing that I want to talk about. Yes. So the other one was the story of the buffalo, her association with the water buffalo, and the story of the buffalo skin. Now there's another myth. Okay, there's another story. And I actually have this over here. Okay, this is from an article by Ajibade George Olusola. From the folklore site, he talks about he's talking about animal symbolism in this article, and he talks about a woman who is a I'll read this to you directly from him. According to the myth, a hunter went into the bush to hunt, and as he was laying in ambush for animals on a tree, he saw a buffalo next to a termite's nest. As he was getting ready to shoot the buffalo, he saw the buffalo turned into a beautiful woman, who put clothes on and hid its skin inside the termite's nest. The hunter was astonished and could not do anything until the animal woman left the spot. Later on, the hunter came down from the tree, took the skin from the termite nest, and climbed up the same tree to lay in ambush again. Later on, the animal woman came and wanted to take the skin so she could transform into a buffalo again, but the skin was gone. She searched for it, and all her efforts were in vain. Then the hunter came down and approached the animal woman and asked what she was searching for. The woman answered, and the hunter told her he would show her where the skin was only if the woman consented to become his wife. The woman agreed to the proposal after a long persuasion that her secret would not be revealed to anybody. This was how they entered into marriage. When the hunter returned home, he introduced the new wife to the former housewife without revealing the secret of the new wife. They went on with their lives, and the wife had three children with the hunter. Over the years, the senior wife became curious as to the identity of the strange wife, but the husband refused to reveal it until one day, which he was enticed with delicacies by the senior wife and told her the secret and where he kept her buffalo skin. She was warned by the husband not to divulge the information to anyone or he risked dying. This is how they continued their life. One day, the hunter went to the farm with one of his children with the animal woman, and the rest of them stayed home with their mother and with the senior wife and her children. There was a quarrel between the two wives, and the senior wife then used the secret of the skin to abuse the junior wife. She said, and I'm not going to try to repeat the African, I'm not sure if this is Nigerian, but I'm not going to try to repeat that. It translates to, "Eat and drink, your skin is inside the barn." The junior wife was surprised to hear this and greatly disturbed her. She felt that almost everybody in the village must have known her secret. The abuse revealed to her where the hunter kept the skin. She took it and turned into a buffalo again, and so did her children. And they headed towards the farm where the hunter had gone with the other child. By the time the strange buffaloes arrived at the farm, the hunter already knew there was a problem. He armed himself and the child and prepared for the battle. The buffalo, his wife who had turned into an animal, reminded the hunter of their bond and that the bond was broken by the hunter. The latter asked for forgiveness, but it was all in vain. They started to fight. In the end, when the father was killed by the mysterious buffalo, the child ran home. The boy was running away. He was told by the buffalo that he and his generation must continue to worship the buffalo. The buffalo went into the bush and left one horn on the ground for the boy as the idol to be worshipped. The boy was unable to turn into a buffalo because of the medicine that the hunter used on him. This is how the worship of Oya started among the Yoruba and is still conducted to this day. Okay, so we see this story of the buffalo. And one of the things, now this is a type of folk tale about the animal slash woman who has a skin that she takes, that she, so her transformative power, she can put this skin on and become the animal and take it off. And we see this is also strikingly like the mythology or the folklore that surrounds the Selkie, which is a type of fairy-like creature that turns into a seal. Okay, it's a seal woman, basically. And we see legends of the Selkie in Scotland and in parts of Ireland. And up in the Shetlands as well, there's definitely this idea of the, there's also an actual story of a man who sees a beautiful woman who takes her seal skin off, and he does the same thing. He hides her seal skin, and when she comes to look for it, basically in that animal skin lies the power and the independence and the sovereignty of the female figure. So as soon as she takes that off, it's sort of like she loses her sovereignty. And in a way, it's almost like creating a vulnerability there. It's the idea that one's animal nature is what makes one, quote unquote, ferocious. And it also makes me kind of think about some of the, again, when we talk about the dark feminine and we talk about the qualities of the dark feminine, We often have a lot of animal comparisons, for example, like the idea of the mother bear who protects their children. There's this idea of the monstrous female, who might be represented as a dragon or a serpent, for instance. Now, of course, a buffalo is also an extremely powerful and dangerous animal, especially if it charges at you. And so the idea is that this animal essence is the essence of the feminine power, okay? That it's this primal, and of course, when you talk about the animals, we're talking about the powers of nature. We're talking about the powers of the earth, okay? So I find that to be, now, when I read this story and I think about that, and then I think about the Selkie story, I find myself saying, okay, well, it kind of makes sense in a doctrine-laden, ethics-laden religion that is also humanistic and raises human beings up by virtue of their reason and their rationality. Okay, so I'm reasonable and I'm rational, and this sets me above the animals, like that your animal nature is your lower nature. So the fact that you see these very powerful women with these very strong and ferocious animalistic associations, there's this idea that it's the animalistic quality that needs to be tamed. And I feel like that kind of could be, it's almost another piece of the puzzle as to why people are so frightened of the feminine, because it, again, it represents this terrifying energy, this very ferocious energy of the animal. Although, as you see in these stories, the animals are not without their intelligence. You know, it's not like, oh, the humans are intelligent and the animals are just, you know, mindless. You see that they also have a spirit and an intelligence. But in Western religious thought, that was only sort of derided as quote-unquote animism, and they believed all the animals and the trees had spirits in them. Ha ha, isn't that silly? Well, you know, it also is that part of that justification that you see in biblical thinking, that quote-unquote, you know, God quote-unquote set man over the, you know, over creation. And it's a stance that science adopts as well, which is why I say that in that respect, science and religion are both two sides of the same coin. They follow the same myth that our technology and our rationality and our reason are what is going to, make us, we're going to outsmart the world. We're going to dominate it. And by these kinds of associations with these powers of women that make women very independent and sovereign, if they're kind of viewed in this sort of animalistic way, there's this idea of, yes, you take away her animal skin, you take away her animal nature, and now she becomes a docile wife. Something very interesting to think about. But Oya, of course, in this one, she ends up leaving this husband, and later on, you know, how this connects in with the myth of Shango is not really, the connection there is not particularly discussed. But we definitely see her here as a kind of buffalo deity. And whether this was an earlier myth or a later myth, I don't have any kind of chronology on that. One may not even exist. But you have, but it occurs to me that really gives pause. Because, you know, to sit here and think about, what do we mean here when we talk about the woman taking off her animal skin? Nonetheless, we Oya's associations, as we see here, have to do with the wind and with storms. There are other deities that have a similar association, like I think I'm going to say her name right, Guabanakesh, I think is how you say it. She is a bringer of hurricanes in the Puerto Rican. Taino, is that the way they say it? I don't have my notes in front of me on that. But the Taino people of Puerto Rico had this goddess. And, and certainly in those areas, certainly in the Caribbean areas, these powerful figures who are goddesses of water and bringers of storms and ferocious winds, there's still good reason there for those to be appeased. I often think about religions like Wicca, where people are trying to recreate some kind of religion that connects to the natural world, but to do it in such a way as though we're dependent on the agricultural cycle in the same way that our ancestors were. I mean, unless you're living in like a remote village somewhere and growing all your own food, it does seem kind of bizarre. But with deities like this, I mean, it's very easy to see why you would still want to make a pact or make an arrangement, you know, because these forces can wipe you out. And that is part of what Oya does. She is that ferocious wind that like rips the roof off your house and, followed by the thunderstorm and probably also by the rains. So between her and Shango, they are big storm bringers. So they are not deities to be dealt with. They're deities to be treated with great respect. And actually, in all the religions we had mentioned, in that sort of Afro-Brazilian tradition, like Umbanda, Kimbanda, and it's the one that begins with a C. I want to say Kambole, but I don't remember Candomblé. Sorry, I knew I was missing a syllable somewhere. Candomblé. Okay. And in the Candomblé tradition, they say she's a warrior. She's unbeatable. She's referred to as, let me see if I'm saying this right, Iansa. Includes a great intensity of feeling, sensation, and charm, and control over the mysteries of the dead. And syncretized with Saint Barbara. That's rather interesting too. So in Candomblé, she's associated with Saint Barbara. In the other, she's associated with this Virgin of Candelaria. So, she is this presence. She is this very powerful Orisha, and her influence does extend throughout the different Afro-Brazilian religions. And as you can see, she has her parallels with Maman Brigitte in Haitian voodoo. So, yeah, we have this, you know, very liminal deity. Her liminality is probably the last thing I think I'll mention here. And that is that she is, you know, she's got her machete. So they said, she cuts away old wood and makes way for the new. So you, again, you have this idea. And then she's the one who, you know, acts as a psychopomp. She helps the newly dead get to their next destination. So she's like a gatekeeper. She's helping people cross. She's a guardian of cemeteries. And she brings very sudden and violent change, which in a way makes her very similar to some other deities you might not think of as liminal, like Artemis and Apollo in the Greek. Because they also, you know, as much as they had to do, you know, they had to do with sudden and violent death and plagues. And in Artemis's case, with the passage of women from girlhood to you know, actual womanhood and the ability to, you know, menarche and being able to bear children and so forth. So she definitely has this kind of liminal quality. It's also worth mentioning, I think, that the water buffalo, even though there's no obvious connection between Hindu religion and the African religions, it is rather interesting that the water buffalo is associated in Hinduism. Actually, it's considered to be an evil animal because, as we said, the Mahisasura, the great demon, is in the form of a buffalo, a charging buffalo. And the mount of which guy is it? It's Varahi. She's considered to be the spouse of Yama, the lord of the dead, and his animal and his mount or is considered to be a buffalo. Okay, so the buffalo has this it already has an association with death in certain cultures, and it also. There's this definite sense of danger and ferociousness that needs to be respected. And certainly Native Americans have their own traditions of buffalo, which I won't get into here since this isn't particularly a podcast on buffaloes, but more on this association of Oyas, because, you know, you see these two aspects of her. You see her as this powerful mother who does her motherly duty and fights with these women who are, you know, just interested in making themselves up and so forth and not doing the work. But she still ends up being the favorite of Shango, sexually as well, because there's that earthiness, that sexiness that is not necessarily, I mean, there's an attractiveness associated with the sort of waif-like, pretty, you know, women. I mean, obviously men can be very attracted to that, but then there's this also this more earthy and more sensual deity that we see in Oya. She represents that, and, you know, this very fiercely independent womanhood, which they, in this particular mythology, becomes associated with the buffalo, and when her skin is taken away, you know, again, there's that symbolism of stripping and making you vulnerable by either taming or, you know, or actually, perhaps even a woman on her own, hiding her own animalistic nature. Which I think a lot of women are encouraged to do, because the idea is that, you know, you have to be nice, you know, you have to keep things, you know, that's your job, you know, you just gotta be nice. And, you know, some of us don't do as well at that. So, anyway, that's what I think I have to say about Oya for this week. I want to thank you again for listening. If you're interested in these podcasts, and you're interested in some of the other work I'm doing, please check out Chthonia.net. If you're interested in contributing to my work, patreon.com/chthonia. I occasionally get complaints about certain things, maybe the quality of certain things or certain things that don't get edited certain ways and so forth. A lot of this is because I run this podcast on very limited equipment and very limited funds. So, you know, if one of your complaints is that you think some of these things should be better produced or should be better. Well, you know, like I said, if I have more money to run it, then, I can, you know, invest in that. But in the meantime, I'm still doing this as kind of a bare bones operation. So, just saying that. But there's patreon.com/chthonia. I want to thank the people who already contribute and, you know, and new contributors who I've, had, you know, towards the end of 2020 and perhaps the beginning of this year. And, also if you're interested in, you know, in the very practical side of my work, there's also liminalreiki.com, where I work with people in transition on helping them kind of find their way in the dark, as it will, and working on rebalancing, which is why there's a focus on tarot, astrology, and Reiki. Those are at least are some of the tools that I use to help people, you know, again, this is not about me curing anybody, but just about people, helping people figure out, you know, where they're at and, you know, what their best way to stay centered before they know where to go next. Find me on social media, Chthonia on YouTube, Chthonia Podcast, two words on Facebook, one word on Instagram and Twitter. Like I said, subscribe. You know, thank you for, I'm getting a ton of new subscribers on YouTube. I was like, wow. So I want to thank all of you very much for investing and listening. And, with that, I think that will be it for this week. I hope you are all enduring the winter very well, you know, because this will be released probably late January. So hopefully, hopefully we're all moving towards, positive change in terms of COVID and everything else. And with that, I will talk to you in the next episode.